Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. I have with me in the studio a great old friend, Ivan Ivatovic. He is, of course, a corporate trainer and a coach. We're looking at a few items when it comes to how we can level up your corporation and your company. Ivan, again, thanks very much for coming over. It's been a long time since we last had a chat. We've done one or two podcasts together, and that was interesting. But the time is now for you to appear on TV and for you to talk about your services. But more importantly, let's look at some of the developments that is currently happening in and around the world, especially in Malaysia, companies big and small. Some of the trends that we need to explore would include intergenerational friction at the workplace. I have very young teammates and very unyoung teammates. And, you know, sometimes they can work well together. Sometimes we don't really understand what they do and how they do it. So how do you look at intergenerational friction within corporations big and small? And how do companies need to approach this?
Yeah, so it's a pleasure to be here. It's been a long time and it's always a pleasure to talk to you. So I think, first of all, the framing is important, right? So we have to look at it positively. I think a lot of the time we tend to whine about it. You know, whatever the generation is, the young or the old, you know, the Gen Z or the boomers. And, you know, the Gen Z would go, oh, these boomers don't understand anything. And then the boomers would go, oh, the Gen Z are lazy and unmotivated and uncommitted.
I had to use that argument when I was your age, blah, blah, blah. And my colleague spotted that and said, hey, dude, you finally used it.
Yes.
When I was your age argument.
Exactly.
And
exactly. Exactly. And we all do that. And that's when we know that we have reached a certain age, right? But yeah, so this thing exists for sure, right? And by the way, it's not a new thing. Going back to history, I remember reading somewhere that I think it was ancient Egyptian, there was a clay tablet where literally someone was complaining that today youth are godless and lazy. So this is a really old problem. This is nothing new. So I think the framing is important, right? That this is actually a good thing, okay? So instead of looking at it, oh, this is gonna, you know, come in the way of, you know, productivity, working together, there's stuff we can learn, right? So the way I would approach it, okay, I'm becoming a boomer. What can I learn from my Gen Z colleagues? And vice versa. So I think we have to frame it like there is something to be gained from this friction and approach it positively and not from a place of judgment.
I was interviewing a 25-year-old founder. He's a small enterprise and he did extremely well when it comes to sales. He was producing juices and he was selling, I don't know, hundreds of thousands of worth of ringgit at one event, which is the Billie Eilish concert. Wow. When I was asking him, how did you market yourself? And he says he has to rely on his social media team. And he's the oldest in his social media team. That took me by surprise. You're 25 and you're the oldest in your social media team. So it seems like kids are now entering the workforce. How do you manage that whole notion of, you know, there's kids now in the workforce and then there's people like me, not so much kids, and then like really old people in the workforce. How do you manage that?
I think it's exactly what you say. We have to find the right fit, right? So we have to ask ourselves, like this gentleman you're talking about, right? He is really good at social media. So in that case, we shouldn't look at how old is he, but we should look at the skill set, right? What can he accomplish? And he will do a better job, either me or you, in terms of social media. Yeah. So I think organizations, management, bosses have to look at it that way, is look at the skill set they are bringing and not how old they are or how many years of experience they have. I think those are outdated metrics. Okay. We have to look at what is the value you bring.
It's also how open-minded the organization is in terms of accepting values and see what works for different generations and what value system they rely on. Do you feel that that could be a big challenge in terms of us trying to smoothen the friction of intergenerational conflict?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think that is always the case, right? So what we are up against is what we call tradition, right? And you know, one of my favorite definition of tradition is that's peer pressure from the past, right? Mm. Definitely that is going to be a challenge. But I think there's nothing wrong with trying, right? So even if you're an organization that has used to do things in the traditional way, you can try it out. You can give it a shot. Let's give that young lady or young man an opportunity to do, you know, something really important and then see how that goes. Because otherwise, you know, things just never going to change.
Based on my experience, I have seen how the seasoned employers or employees are trying to impart knowledge towards the younger generation. However, the reverse might not necessarily be so generalized. Not many of the younger generations are trying to see their elder counterparts as a mentor kind of source. Do you feel that that is again a common thing that's happening right now? And what would be some of the ideas in terms of outreach? Which generation should do more outreach to the other?
That's a great question. And I think it is the more senior generation, so whether it's the boomers or the Gen X, they should do the outreach. Because as you said, traditional mentoring is there, right? I have the experience and I'm going to teach you how to do these things. And that's fine. But I would advocate for something we can call reverse mentoring, right? So meaning, what can this young person teach me? And I think what that requires from us, whether it's Gen X or boomers, is actually humility, right? Having the humility and having the understanding is that they have something to offer. Whether that's social media expertise, whether that's political correctness, there's something I can learn. So I think the leaders and the managers should approach it that way. This young person can be a resource for me, and I mentor him, and he or she mentors me. And I think that can be a very fruitful relationship.
Fantastic. We'll go for one short break before we continue on our conversation with Ivan Ivatovic. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me in the studio a great old friend. I've known him for over 20 years now. He is a corporate trainer and a coach, Ivan Ivatovic. Ivan, let's talk a little bit more in terms of some of the trends that is afflicting, I suppose, or going through corporate Malaysia right now. One item is, of course, the Great Resignation. We've seen companies going through a lot of resignation. And sometimes forced, actually. It's not resignation, and they're offered MSS or VSS. And employees are willingly and happily taking it. Where is the situation when it comes to the Great Resignation in Malaysia? And do we need to stop it, or do we need to slow it down? What's the story there?
Yeah, so I think the situation, it varies from industry to industry. But for example, especially hospitality was very heavily hit. Because what was happening was a lot of people lost their jobs during COVID. And now that we are in the post-pandemic stage, hotels and resorts, for example, want to rehire people. And nobody wants to come back. Now, there are a few reasons for it. One is they don't want to feel that uncertainty ever again. You know, they feel kind of betrayed that they will let go. The secondary aspect is that once they have been retrenched or let go during the pandemic, they tasted a kind of freedom. And many of these individuals, they became solopreneurs, they started their own thing, they became freelancers. And suddenly they realized, I'm making same money, maybe more, and I'm my own boss. And this is a very powerful thing, right? So I think these are the two things that...
Even less money, as long as they're solopreneurs.
Exactly. Exactly.
It's still a great motivator.
It's a great motivator because you're working for yourself. So I think these are some of the primary drivers of the Great Resignation. So to your question, what can we do to slow this down? I think, again, employees here have to realize that the old model that you clock in at 9 and you clock out at 5 and you just do your job, even if you have nothing to do, just sit at your table, we have to retire that. And we have to craft jobs for people in organizations that are engaging, that there is purpose, and they have a high level of autonomy. People don't want to be robots being told what to do. We have to allow them to, be an entrepreneur within the organization. And I think then people are willing to stay.
But bottom line is still bottom line. KPIs are still KPIs. Sales are still sales. So how do you become a dictator, which is always the case when it comes to corporates, but try to understand that whole third idea that I want to explore with you, which is the reintegration of a hybrid working environment. You're asking your people to be productive, but you are chasing bottom line. You have people, everybody has a boss,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes, yes.
So how do you integrate this?
Well, this is, this is very, very, very situational, okay? But in the end, when you look at research on this, right? Employees who have a lot of freedom and who have a sense of purpose, they tend to perform better. So they actually add to the bottom line. When you have a bunch of people who are just rigidly following rules, in whatever department we are talking about, right, it is going to lead to decreased productivity. So I think what employers and companies have to realize is that it makes sense to give more freedom, more autonomy to our workers, because eventually it leads to better, better performance, which then leads to obviously a better bottom line. So again, it requires you to let go, and then you will see the results.
Okay, one more short break before we go a bit in depth in terms of the solutioning to the kind of ideas and problems that we presented. Thanks for staying on with us. I have with me Ivan Ivatovic. Let's talk a little bit more in terms of the work that you're doing right now, the kind of solutions that you bring to your partners and your clients, and perhaps draw on your experience. You've been doing this for close to 2 decades now. What are the stories that you can tell us when it comes to corporations who do well in transformation, and of course corporates that are addressing a specific problem and trying to apply the specific solution and it works for them or it doesn't work for them? Let's draw on your experience on that based on the trends that we've spoken for the past 20 minutes right now.
Sure. So as a corporate trainer, as a coach, I help individuals and organizations to develop what we call their soft skills, right? And the funny thing is, I don't like to call it soft skills, because to me it is even more important than your technical skills. So what I see with a lot of my clients, they have amazing hardware. They have great buildings, they have beautiful offices, but what really matters is the quality of the human beings who work there. And just putting them together in one building, not gonna make them miraculously work together. Mm-hmm. They have to develop specific skills, intrapersonal skills, that enables you to collaborate and to work better. So that is basically what I help them to do. So whether that's a team building program or whether that's leadership or communication, I help companies to really come together as a team, because in the end, that is the difference maker. Everyone has the same sort of hardware, they have the same buildings, they have the same product. What is the difference? The difference are the people. And the success or the failure really depends on that.
What about leadership, especially the CEO or the chief people officer, similar role? Do you feel that if they don't want to adapt to change or embrace the kind of transformative environment that they're in, that's basically the end of the story for their company?
You're absolutely correct, right? We always say the fish rots from the head, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So this is why leadership is so important. And leaders have to become self-aware. They have to let the power trip go. And they have to realize that they are in the business of growing people. They are, as you said, they are not dictators. They should be like coaches, getting their people, getting them inspired, getting them motivated, giving them purpose, growing them. If they do that, people are willing to go the extra mile.
But that's also important to look at boards, board of directors, because they are the ones responsible for appointing the boss. Do you feel that boards are clued in terms of the necessary requirements of a job scope? No longer looking at CV, no longer looking at hard skill and experience. It's also the interpersonal skill of that individual.
I think we are not there yet. I think a lot of the time, again, boards are very, bottom line focused, which is
it's important.
Enough.
Yeah,
it's important. But the thing is, who's gonna get you there? And if you get a traditional CEO, command and control, he may get you there, but the damage that is done on the way, it might be immeasurable, right? Mm. I mean, organizations go out of business. So I think boards have to consider this very, 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 very carefully. You want a leader with humility, a leader who doesn't have an ego issue, a leader who is not toxic, and someone who's willing to invest and grow their people. And I think if you have those criterias, then the bottom line is going to take care of itself.
One of the big ideas that I want to have you on my show is because you're a great proponent and ally of diversity. And I'm not just talking about gender diversity, I'm talking about diversity outright. Where do you feel the requirements of diversity is in place in Malaysia, corporate Malaysia? And do you feel that we are not encouraging diversity enough when it comes to leadership in corporate Malaysia?
Yeah, I think again, it is a mindset issue, right? You know, the first thing about diversity is research after research shows is that diversity is helping your bottom line. The more, whether it's gender, whether it's any kind of other orientation, whether it's neurological diversity, when you have different type of thinking in the room, you're gonna get better solutions. And when you get better solutions, you're gonna get better results. So again, this is something that some companies are making progress on. We are still at the slogan stage where it's on the wall, you know, but it's not in reality. And going back to our earlier conversation about younger generation, this is something the younger generation really understands.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
They really understand. So if I were a CEO, if I were a board, I would get these young people to champion diversity because it is a benefit to the organization if you really embrace it.
Do you feel that young people are running away from leadership because they find that it's a futile effort and they're better off doing their own thing?
Yes, and that is because they have seen mostly negative examples of leadership, mostly toxic leaders, and they don't want to be that person. So I think it's very important that we champion and we integrate the holistic leader, you know, that you don't have to be this dominant aggro person to be a leader, but in fact you can be someone who is nurturing and growing people. That is real leadership.
The final area of exploration I want to do with you today is on the issue of masculinity. What does it mean in your view of being a masculine man, and how do you harness the idea of being masculine based on your definition in terms of bringing productivity in corporate Malaysia?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think first of all,
thank you.
First of all, being masculine means that you are secure. Okay, a lot of the toxic masculinity is coming from insecure men. Okay, the guys puffing their chest and getting into fights, that comes from insecurity. So real masculinity is you are secure. Number two, you take care of others in your charge. Right? I mean, this is the archetype, the warrior. You know, the warrior is not only about, you know, killing the enemy. The warrior is about taking care of those in your charge. And I think the final thing is also masculinity is, ironically, is being vulnerable. You know, boys shouldn't cry. To me, that's absolute nonsense. A real man is in touch with his feelings and is willing to be vulnerable and is willing to admit their weaknesses and their shortcomings, and then grow from there. Okay, so you know, for me, this is work on your insecurities, take care of those in your charge, and be willing to be vulnerable. To me, this is the new model of masculinity. And the opposite, you know, the Andrew Tates of the world, they preach the opposite, you know, which is be aggressive, you know, never show weakness, you know, just you know, focus on getting rich and you know, powerful and famous. And again, we as the older generation have to guide the younger generation. So now again, going back to the mentoring, right? That who should they be listening to when they are looking at what it means to be a real man?
Do you feel that the Andrew Tates get more airtime as opposed to these kind of values of masculinity that you has defined?
Absolutely, because you know, it is more eye-catching. And of course, they play at the very base instincts, right? You know, they have the beautiful girls, they have the cars, they have the bling bling. And you know, young man especially is very impressionable about these kind of things. But I do see a balance. So there are a lot of influencers who are emphasizing other values.
By the way,
You know, hopefully the Andrew Tates of the world are you know, going to fall behind. But it is continuous work. It is continuous work.
Okay, translating this to 2023 and the kind of challenges that lie within, do you feel that diversity critical to look at intergenerational friction that needs to be smoothened out? The definition of masculinity in terms of taking care of your ward and being vulnerable and being able to talk about this, these are all, I guess, while scary when it comes to the changes that is currently happening, it is actually quite old, as say, for instance, what you mentioned just now. Yeah. So it's really not that new. But yet we're still, you know, grappling it and looking at it as if it's something that has been created today. How do you think we need to approach this or problem solving this? Do you think that more team building or coaching or engagement with public is needed? Or do you think that, you know, we have to go back to, you know, this old age of McKinsey's and BCG's and management consulting in terms of solving these kind of problems or taking leveling up to the next level?
So I think like everything else, it starts with a mindset shift. And I think that's where we need to start. And how do you do that? I think all of the above you have, you know, mentioned, you know, whether it's a training program, you know, whether that's, you know, coaching, you know, shift people's thinking. You know, that's where we start. But also what is very important is, you know, it's not just about attending a training program. What happens next? Mm. How do you make the changes stick? Okay? And you know, that's what I'm very passionate about, because I want organizations and individuals to grow, but I don't want just, you know, them to attend the training and then go back and nothing changes, right? How do we move behavior positively, and how do we grow people? That's what I'm curious about, and I think that is it is possible. Change is possible. You know, I have seen companies, individuals changing. It takes time and effort, but you know, I think staying the same,
that's the death of you.
That's the end. Whether you're an individual or an organization, you are stagnant.
Product owners and business leaders, they tend to know what needs to be done or improve within their own, I guess, shop of an organization. But sometimes when we look at the learning and training development of a company or HR department, they want to help and they are earnest in terms of trying to get the best corporate trainers in, but they might not necessarily understand the requirements by the business leaders. How do you match these two requirements? HR people that are earnest and trying to help and present the best solutions to them versus the business leaders who think that they know the kind of solutions but can't source for resource on leveling up their team.
Another amazing question. Now, so there is, you are absolutely correct.
You're already on the show. You don't have to butter me up right now.
there is a disconnect, right, between HR and sometimes the business need of the organization. And I think what companies who are really good at this stuff, they make sure that the business people, you know, the ones who don't understand HR, they are, you know, running a department. They are able to articulate what are the training needs.
Okay.
So they think like HR, and vice versa. The best HR departments are the ones who understand what the business needs, what skills need to be grown in order for the company to progress in terms of business results and bottom line. So meaning, you know, the HR people have to think like business people, and the business people have to think a little bit like HR people. And then when we have this synergy, then we're going to have you know, they are going to select the right programs and the right trainings for the company.
See, this is what I'm afraid of, because sometimes the simplest solutions are the hardest to execute. When you're asking somebody to put themselves in another person's shoes, okay, good and well. I haven't seen anybody doing it well, however, unfortunately. And, you know, do you think that is the crucial one? To be empathetic. That's the theme, actually, to be frank.
Yes.
Yeah. To throw away your ego and to be empathetic, essentially.
Exactly, essentially. That's what it is. Can you see the world from the perspective of another person? If you can do that, that will make you an amazing leader, an amazing communicator, an amazing connector. That is, and as you said, simple, not easy.
Yeah.
But if you, and again, like anything else, it's something you need to work on. First time you try it, it's going to be difficult. But with a lot of practice, with a lot of awareness, it is actually doable. And you know, that's what great leaders do. They can see the world from someone else's perspective.
Okay, if people want to reach out to you, how do they go about that?
Okay, one of the best ways is...
You're not on TikTok, unfortunately. That's the thing.
I'm not on TikTok, but after your encouragement, I may get on it. I'm on Instagram, but I have my own website, which is my name, ivanevatovic.com. You can look me up there. You have all information and other contacts.
Fantastic. That was Ivan Ivatovic, a naturalized Malaysian, I suppose, who has been here far longer than me, I suppose, because you know, he's a very old friend of mine. Also, he's a young man, at heart at least. So do check him out, do reach out to him. My name is Ibrahim Sani, catch you in the next one.